Who are you?
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5, presented by Zata Jewelers, KFNC and KFNC HD2, Mont Bellevue, Houston. Talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
You probably heard Granato's promos on this radio station saying he's tired of embrace the suck. He wants to stop the suck, which you can make a comparison that embracing the suck is hopefully someday going to stop the suck. Mark this date down, October 25th. Where John Granato of the bench, the godfather of Houston sports radio, and rightfully so, I want to be Granato when I grow up, he has seen the light. He's ready to embrace the suck.
I love it.
John deked us. John gave us the little
hard
count.
I'm getting into, you know what, embrace the suck.
Starting to get into,
embrace
no,
the
you've
suck.
Got action still.
I do have it. No, I don't.
You need a win. Start
the
this week with a win.
The drive for five is over. The drive for five is
it starts.
Done.
It starts this week.
You said he's seen the light.
He saw it. He's even willing to put away his bets to embrace the suck. That's high praise.
I don't think you are allowed to say somebody has seen the light when their voice sounds that defeated.
He did sound defeated, didn't he?
Ivan, like that just sounds.
You can sound defeated. It's like a gambler that knows when to call it a day. I mean, he's not happy about it. He's not going to sound jubilant, but he understands what the right decision
Do
is.
Do you realize how insane it is to sound that defeated when you were looking for five wins?
I know. The drive for five is over. There's still 10 games left in the
season. I
mean,
I don't disagree with him.
I don't either. I don't
either.
But
it's just like to be that defeated on a team you were looking for five wins is like, man, that's tough.
You can tell that he doesn't want to embrace the suck. You can tell that he still wants the Texans to get to those five wins because he has the over, which I understand. And maybe that was the reason that he wants to stop the suck because we don't know how many commas were in that bet. But Even having the money on the other side, even wanting to reach that number, it's like, best interest of this organization might be to go ahead and embrace the suck. Aggie Matt on the text line, 713-780-ESPN. He says, you just made the point against your embrace the suck slogan. Doesn't matter where you pick so long as you pick well. Look, there is truth to that. Like, you do have to pick well wherever you are in the NFL draft. But if you have somebody that's really good at what they do, don't you want to try to optimize what they do well? Here's the comparison I would make. Steph Curry's a good shooter, right? Like, if we hope that Nick Caserio is a good drafter, he should be hitting wherever he's picking in the draft. But what makes it easier for Steph Curry to shoot? What makes it easier for Steph Curry to make a shot? Shooting at the free throw line or shooting behind the three-point line? It's easier for a good drafter, Nick Caserio, to make a good selection picking number two than number 22.
Yeah, no, look, I think that when you guys understand a couple of things, I don't enjoy the fact that I brought up embrace the suck, and I wanted you guys to jump on the bandwagon with me and understand it should be a philosophy for us for 2 years. I don't wish that on the Texans, but I could see the bigger picture to understand if you can endure and stomach that for a short period of time, you can win for a longer period of time, and that's why I think they're following the plan to a T, and I like and I'm very encouraged and excited by all the things they've done to get to this point and continue to keep this plan moving forward. To the point that we just got, look, I think that the other thing is, you're right, you need savvy draft evaluators, talent evaluators that know where to draft, but it's also knowing the room, right? Playing the room. Knowing where your pick is and how many times you might have a pick in that very high elite part of the draft, and then knowing the talent available when you know. So, you know what? You could be like a Danny Ainge and know who you want all along in a draft, and it was Jason Tatum. If you can sell the other teams in the league that the other two guys are better and you can actually still get your guy at a lower position, but you know for a fact and you can guarantee that these teams are going to go the direction necessary for you to still get your player, maybe you can even make a move or two to where you get extra picks and still get your guy. So you could use the Browns pick, to our point, if Levis is a guy that looks dinged up, you can't evaluate correctly, and Stroud's the guy that's getting everybody's eye in terms of the number one quarterback in the draft, and you, as an evaluation room, led by Caserio, and your talent evaluators say, we like Levis more, well, then sell it like you're going to take Stroud, get everybody to believe it, maybe even get someone to make a move so that they can get move up to get him because they want him too, and get the guy you want all along in Levis down with the Browns pick.
That's always the other part of it too. Like, you have to draft well wherever you are. Absolutely, absolutely facts. Like, there's no arguing there. but also the value of the pick. Like, what is the value of the number 2 pick versus the value of the number 12 pick? Like, that you have to consider that. That has to be part of the equation, especially for a Will and Dylan son of a gun like Nick Caserio. Woo. 713-780-ESPN. Let's head out to the HRMP listener line. Get Francisco in here. Francisco, what's going on? You're in the high with the Killer Bees. Francisco's turning right. Give him a second. Francisco's making a turn. As soon as he turns right, he'll be ready to chat with the Killer Bees. Francisco, what's going on?
Hey, how y'all doing, fellas? A huge fan. Hey, I just had a question. I wanted to get y'all's opinion. I heard y'all talking about the Texans, and I'm a huge Texans fan, you know, unfortunately, at the moment. But before the season started, you know, I saw the schedule, and it seemed kind of soft, right, at some point in the season. And I went to the casino, and I seen the over and under at the DraftKings sportsbook, and they have it at 3.5, which Vegas has at 4.5. So I'm like, man, they're gonna win 4 games for sure. So I put a huge, you know, a good wager on it. Mm. And well, right now I'm about to hit the panic button, man. So I just want to get y'all's opinion on what y'all think on the. Do you think they'll get to the 4 games?
No.
Appreciate the call, Francisco. Look, I think it's still in play. I mean, they've been in all of these games.
Hit that button hard and hit it now.
But, I mean, you hit the panic button, what's he going to do? Like,
I don't know.
Hedge it the other way, start playing money lines the other way and get terrible value.
No.
I think the Texans could still potentially get to 4 wins.
I would just hit the button. I didn't know the ramifications. I'm just saying hit it because I don't think they're getting to 4 wins.
They have the Commanders at home. That's a winnable game. They have the Browns at home, but the Browns are getting Deshaun Watson back in that game. Ooh, that's going to be a great game. I cannot wait for December 4th. That is the only game I have circled on the Texans calendar.
Yeah, the environment stadium is going to be pretty special.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a winnable game, especially with that home foot advantage that you're going to have that
day.
And they're not playing well, and who knows what they're going to look like with Deshaun Watson first game back. I think there's going to be an element of time before they start clicking on all cylinders. I don't think Deshaun Watson is going to hit the road going 85 miles down the hour or 85 miles per hour down the road day one, which Deshaun Watson likes to do that. Did you see the arrest video on TMZ? Not the arrest video. They pulled him over for speeding. But that's a winnable game. I think the Colts, I know it's in Indy, but Colts? They're playing Sam Ehlinger. I know Sam Ehlinger loves to be back and all that stuff, but it's the Colts with Sam Ehlinger. That's a winnable game. Jacksonville, they have how many wins now over the Jags in a row? That's a winnable game. I think there's 4 winnable games left on the Houston Texans schedule, and they still might steal one. Like, would it completely shock you if they beat the Titans 20-17 on Sunday?
No, it would completely piss me off.
Right. Yeah. I think that's not a huge winnable game, but that's a game, which that's a late game, by the way. Why are the Texans playing at 3:05 against the Titans? I love it, but it's weird.
I don't understand it either. Look, I think that it's possible, and I kid when I say press the panic button because it doesn't look good right now.
Mm-hmm.
But the way this league has gone, and Brendan will tell you about, you know, getting us to take Carolina to basically not only cover, but they win the game outright against Tampa. It's so unpredictable the way the NFL is kind of upside down in a lot of ways with the powers that are supposed to be not being and other teams stepping up bigger. So, yeah, is it possible? Sure. Francisco, I mean, I'm not going to keep my fingers crossed for you, though, because I don't think that they should. I don't think that I want them to, and I don't think it's in their best interest, but I know it's in the best interest of your financials.
I know you guys aren't going to agree, but I think, in a way, 4 might be, like, the perfect number. Because 4 means... You caught some, I don't want to say some heat, but like you definitely are going to have to play, I don't know, better football than early season to win 3 more games. But I still think 4 wins and a tie, I kind of think it's still a top 5 pick.
I think it would be top 5.
You might be pushing it a little bit. 3, I think you're safely top 5.
Sure, I think
4. 4, I think you still are.
I do too. I think like... We were talking about earlier the teams that are in that conversation, right? I think you have 3, 4, 5 teams that are going to be under 5 wins. Like, they're going to be 3, 4 wins. And then the next tier of bad teams, maybe like the Bears are in this conversation, maybe the Commanders are in this conversation, I still think they get to 5 to 6 wins. I think that extra game now kind of changes the perspective of like how many wins it takes to get a top 5 pick, how many losses it takes to get a top 5 pick. Twitch is challenging us, twitch.tv/ESPN975. Because we're talking about Caserio being a good drafter, and E says, who said he's a good drafter? Todd says they keep saying that, which I have no idea where this information is coming from at this point of the season. I think if you look at Nick Caserio's drafts, 1.5 drafts.
Todd, the show?
Yeah.
He doesn't believe they've had a good draft?
No, I don't think that he believes that. I believe that's the way he's speaking. If you go 2 years ago, Nico Collins as a third rounder, I think Nico Collins has showed some things this year, and I understand he has a groin injury and he might miss some time here. I think Nico Collins has shown things to be worthy of a third round draft pick. We bang on Davis Mills, but if Davis Mills is starting games in his second season in the NFL after being a third round draft pick, that I think that's a hit. And I don't think Davis Mills is a top 25 quarterback, but I think he's a top 35 quarterback. And if you're drafting a top 35 quarterback in the third round, I think that's that overall a hit. I don't think Roy Lopez, and I think Roy Lopez has been exposed some this year as opposed to last year. That was a six-rounder that's starting football games. Yes, I know it's a bad football team, but a six-rounder that is starting football games. Now, if you turn it over to this year, Stingley is an NFL starter for a decade. Now, did they get it wrong with Sauce? I think that's fair to say, but still drafted a good football player at number three. Kenyon Green looks like a stalwart left guard for the next decade in the NFL. Jalen Petrie, some people think, is already a top five safety in the NFL. We haven't seen Christian Harris, so it's hard to evaluate the third round pick. We haven't seen John Beachy. He did, but I didn't think
sparingly,
he played that well.
Right.
And it was like a very, very, very small sample, and as you said, sparingly. We'll see more of him going forward. We haven't seen John Mechie, but Damian Pierce, fourth rounder,
people starting at running back.
They think he's a top 10 running back in the NFL. So yeah, I think not to say Caserio has been 100% right, and some of the trade ups kind of annoy me too because you have so many holes and you're using draft capital to trade up a few spots. I don't love that, but overall, Nick Caserio in his 1.5 drafts has been successful so far.
That's what's puzzling to me. How can you debate or doubt what Caserio has done in the draft? I understand in coach selection. I understand. In low-level trades. I understand there's lots of other areas that you might be able to say the jury's still out. When you look at just what we just highlighted and the fact that he still has potentially other guys that he drafted after that that could be key contributors on this team, whether it be depth and special teams or otherwise, you have to give him his props. You have to understand this is one of the strengths of him as a general manager since he took over the Texans. And if he does that again and creates four or five starters out of what he's taken in the draft, plus whatever he does with the Cleveland picks. Look, I can understand a good debate in a lot of ways. I don't understand how you doubt Caserio in what he's done in the draft.
Yeah. Aggie, Matt, I still think the Texans need a better OC. Key from L.A., you guys need to talk about the elephant in the room, like coaching staff needs an upgrade. I promise we'll get to that some point this week on the Killer Bees. 713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Do you believe in Team of Destiny stuff? What is the Team of Destiny? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Do you believe in this Team of Destiny stuff? It was pointed out to me today. I've even heard this. Brendan was telling me this. You guys were telling me this. That some people are calling the Phillies a Team of Destiny. Y'all have heard this?
Oh, yeah.
Y'all
have seen this? Talking about the Mariners earlier in the postseason.
Where have y'all seen this?
I've seen it on Twitter. I've seen it. I don't know for sure. I saw it in an article. I've seen a couple of reports on whether it be like Fox or SportsCenter or MLB Network where they were talking about because they eliminated the Braves and you know the way they've gone about their business because they were the last team in and the last team standing in the National League and they have a chance to be the Cinderella story that wins the World Series that they could be a Team of Destiny.
Okay. What quantifies as a Team of Destiny? Because like I don't see anything in the Phillies. Like for me, I need like a great story. I need like a sister gene. I need something that's going to like it's the final year for a coach, something like that, or a manager in this case, of course. Nothing from the Phillies, like last team in, whatever they changed their whole structure. Like, what does it take to be a Team of Destiny? 713-780-ESPN.
Here's where I'd start. I'd start where you were underachieving for the good portion of the start of the season and more, and you made a managerial change, which was risky.
Is that destiny or is that just playing up to your expectations finally?
Well, but I'm saying that, you know, in order to at least be considered as part of destiny, once the change is made, you have to completely change your performance and everything that goes with it and just start stockpiling wins just to try and get in because they had dug themselves such a hole. Then you've got the destiny of Bryce Harper when he signed, saying, you know what, I'm going to be here. I'm going to be here long term. And I don't know if he said it within a 5-year period or whatever. We're going to win the World Series. And, you know, the 2-time MVP is like doing everything, like the game that he won for them to get him to the World Series, where it was almost improbable when you say they're down in the 8th inning and he's got 2 strikes and he goes yard
right.
on a 2-run bomb. And then you start looking at the fact that, you know, like I said, the being the last team to get in, and you beat, you know, a Braves. Did Braves have 100 wins?
I think they were right there. I think
close,
they did get 100
right?
wins.
And they won the division. So you eliminated the Braves.
Yeah, they won 101.
Yeah, your path on the way there, you're beating teams with better records. So you end up being the last team standing to where if you win the World Series and you were the last team to get in, I think that would constitute a team of destiny.
Maybe my I think this is a relative term. I think people's like teams of destiny differ based on the person.
Is destiny just different than improbability? I'd say that the team of the
I would say destiny and probability are 2 very different things.
Okay.
Like, for destiny, I need a story. Like, I need something that's like why this is the reason that they're winning. Maybe
is
like,
Kyle Schwarber not a story, too, in the
Kyle
fact that
Kyle Schwarber doing what?
He is the quietest second-best home run hitter in baseball this season. He got 0 pub or attention for it.
No, that's
all
not
year
destiny.
Long, and he hit how many bombs? 50?
Destiny's like the wife's, you know, the owner of the wife dying, and they're winning it in her honor, or like things like that. That, to me, is what destiny is. Like, they beat the Padres in 5 games. They beat the Braves in 4. They swept the Cardinals in the wild card series.
You know what destiny?
There's nothing that the Phillies have done that makes them a team of destiny.
They beat
me.
2 division winners as the last team
so
to get
the
in.
So did the Astros.
But the Astros
actually,
won 100
actually,
some
they
game, 106 games.
They only beat 1 division winner. My bad.
And the Astros won 106 games. This is a team that wasn't supposed to be there, and if they did, they weren't supposed to beat 2 of the division winners in the National League.
But to your point, I think it's more of a team of improbability than destiny. Like, what is the difference between destiny? Like, I need a story. I think that the Astros are more of a team for destiny, especially the way that you win, I think, is part of the story. They have Dusty Baker, a Hall of Fame manager who has never won a World Series and needs that feather in his cap. Doesn't need it, but it certainly would help in the overall story of Dusty Baker. The way that the Astros have won some of these games are like teams of destiny. The Yordan Alvarez home run down to your final out to spark this whole run. Yordan Alvarez doing it again the very next day. Some historic things that the Astros have done. Taking advantage of other teams' miscues along the way as well. I look at that way more as destiny than I look at the Phillies as a team of destiny.
Can you not say that it's 2 teams
you can
of
only
destiny
have one
meeting
team
each
of
other?
Destiny.
I don't know that you can only have one.
To win it, you got to win it all to be a team of destiny.
And my other question would be, then were the Rockets when they were the lowest seed and the 6th seed the year they won it in 95? Was that a team of destiny?
I think that you could look at some reasons as to why that was the team of destiny. They went on a run that was at the time, and it still might be, I don't know, the most difficult run in NBA playoff history. You bring Clyde Drexler back home. He wins a title for the very first time with his old college teammate in Hakeem Olajuwon. I would say that year was a team of destiny. Sure, I think there's a lot of stories there that make it a team of destiny.
Because I'm just trying to figure out, you know, what is the proper definition and what your take might be different than mine, because that was a team of destiny to me, and I think that the Phillies being as hot as they are, and
they're less hot than the Astros.
But I don't think that I don't think the Astros aren't a team of destiny. I'm saying that's why where you said there can only be one. I don't know that I agree with that. You could have the 2 hottest teams in baseball, and they end up meeting in the World Series, and both could be teams of destiny.
Really,
just one could win.
Huh?
I think that so you never really hear team of destiny about favorites.
Good
point. Joel's definitely right that you only really talk about the improbable teams. I don't know that that's fair, but that's the case. I think it just has to do with feeling when you're watching them. And that's why, like, honestly, I was watching a game 4 with my dad, and when the Yankees went up 3-0, you know, and he's not following the Astros closely, he's like, oh, not looking good. And it's the feeling that you have, for me at least, where I'm just like, I don't really care what the score is. Like, I just feel like the Astros are going to win every game they play in. And for me, like, if you can take that feeling and ascribe it to an underdog, that's when people start talking about team of destiny.
Okay.
Yeah, I think
even
that,
whether or not that's fair.
I think that to your first point, that's exactly the right thing in my mind, is the fact that teams of destiny are never considered to be teams of destiny if they have a winning record or if they're as dominant as the Astros are. It may be very well in the picture you painted with the way they've gone about the wins that they've gotten to this point. And also winning the opening round divisional series that might have been the most difficult sweep in the history of baseball. But because they won 106 games, because they have been this dominant for a 6-year window of time, no one's ever going to think they're a team of destiny. they're going to think a team of destiny with a team that at the start of the playoffs, no one gave a chance to be in the World Series, let alone win it.
Well, I think people were looking at the Philly start of the year as a World Series contender.
I didn't say start of the year, though. I said at the start of the playoffs, the way that everybody was looking at the playoffs, everybody thought the Dodgers were the odds-on favorite. Sure. If it wasn't the Dodgers, the Mets won 100 and some games, or the Braves, who were the hottest team at the end of the regular season, were going to be the three teams to fight it out. And if there was a fourth, it was the Cardinals. So no one really gave the Phillies a chance. Congratulations that they made it, but no one thought they were going to hang around very long. The fact that they're now competing for a World Series gives a lot of people that kind of thought process.
See, you guys have mentioned this, and 3527 mentions this as well, that team of destiny can't be favorites. So, like, two questions that I have. One, like, how do you achieve finality in a team of destiny? I would say that to achieve finality in a team of destiny, that you have to win it all.
If you're going
to the World Series and you're losing, that's not a team of destiny.
I agree with that.
That's a team that came up short in the World Series. I would also say, like, when does this conversation start? Like, 3527, team of destiny can't be favorites. The only reason we're calling, some people are calling, I'm certainly not, calling the Phillies a team of destiny is because they had a little bit of a disappointing regular season. They finished, after they fired Girardi, they finished strong, got the final spot in the National League, and beat some teams along the way. Beat the Cardinals, beat the Braves, beat the Padres in convincing fashion as well. But what if this conversation of team of destiny, what if it started at the beginning of the regular season when the Astros were being looked at as a team that wouldn't win the American League West, and all they do is go win 100-something games and blow away everybody else in the American League West, and then they beat teams the way that they've beaten them so far through the playoffs, where they, you know, down to the final out again to Yordan, hits the go-ahead home run the very next day, taking advantage of Yankees' errors, sweeping the New York Yankees, becoming the first team ever in Major League Baseball history to have eliminated the Yankees four different times. So, like, why does the team of destiny start at the beginning of the playoffs, and then what is this finality to the conclusion of what a team of destiny is?
I think the case that you made was more so that you're saying that the Astros should be the team of destiny.
Absolutely.
And that's fine, but that's why I'm saying there can be two teams of destiny.
Now, but you just said that they couldn't because you got to finish it.
But here's my thing, too. What I was getting to was the also clear-cut separation can be a team of destiny finishes it. A Cinderella story is the team that does everything improbability-wise to get there, but they don't finish.
I do think Joel's right. Whoever wins this World Series is going to be viewed as that.
But everybody's saying that it can't be the favorite.
The way this postseason has gone, if the Astros – maybe not if the Astros win it in like seven, but if the Astros win comfortably, I think people are going to be talking about it that way.
713-780-ESPN. What is a team of destiny? What do you need to be a team of destiny? 713-780-3776. And who is more of a team of destiny? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Right now, I'll tell you about the good people at Apollo Men's Health. Look, Doc O and his staff are fantastic. They take care of their patients. They get them results. And that's the most important thing for you. You just make the appointment. Tell them what you got going on. Look at their website, apollomh.com. See all the services they offer and the ones that might be able to help you. And then go in with an open mind. They're going to talk to you. They're going to set you up on a plan. They're going to get you results. And that's the main thing, because you're not trying to win an Olympic gold medal at this point in your life. You're trying to win the day, trying to get your checklist of things to do done. And you're trying to, you know, be the kind of the father that your family needs and the husband that your wife needs and the employee that your employer needs. And sometimes you're falling short because you don't have the energy. Or maybe you feel like, hey, to make myself a better person and have a chance to live a longer life, I got to take better care of myself and work out. Well, they've got programs that get you on a full body composition analysis so you can chart your results on a week-by-week basis. If you want to recover quicker because you're sore from going to the gym, they have HGH peptide therapy that allows you to get unsore in a faster fashion. Then, of course, it's all the different ways you can get energy in your life. And it starts with B12 shots, and it goes all the way through hormone therapy for both men and women. And I see men and women in the lobby every week when I'm in there talking about the amazing results they've received from the people at Apollo Men's Health. Check them out today. Tell them I sent you by a free body composition analysis or a free B12 shot on your first official visit. More so than that, check them out because they're going to find you results and make you feel better about yourself on a daily basis. From the boardroom to the weight room to the bedroom, if you have questions, they have answers and they have a plan that works. Your health is your wealth. You have to invest in yourself. They're the people to get it done. It's the good people at Apollo Men's Health.
Talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Who is the team of destiny? You were saying something before we went to break there, Blankers. Who is the team of destiny? Astros, Phillies.
Well, see, I think there could be two. But I think that, like I said, I think it could be the difference between if you win it all, you're the team of destiny because you end up on top. If you don't, you can be a Cinderella story. There's plenty of Cinderella stories that fall short. They get there. Their run is improbable. They're impressive in the way that they do it. Maybe, like you said, there's a story or two behind it that adds to why people are jumping on their bandwagon or pulling for them. But at the end of the day, they might fall short too. And that's part of the deal. That's why you love sports. And I think that it's as much as it's not normally the case, it's not the norm to say that a favorite is a team that could be a team of destiny. But when you look at it at the start of the year to all the things that you've already mentioned, Vegas odds had the Dodgers as the number one team to go to the World Series. Throughout the year, you're right. People talked about the Mariners overtaking the Astros and you know, making the statement finally that the West is going to be won a different way. And look at all the whole first half of the season, people were saying the Yankees were not only the best team in the American League, best team in baseball, might have the best overall win-loss record in the history of the game. So you were constantly fighting that uphill battle, and you were kind of under the radar. All of a sudden, now that you've done what you've done and gotten to where you've gotten, and you've done it in such convincing fashion, though we can look at the details if you're just a casual fan and not mention it's the first time you swept a divisional series by playing four games in the amount of innings you played and how close those games were and how close you were to losing a couple of those games. But it doesn't matter. So that adds to it to why people can say, wow, this team, fate's in their hands. The way their things are just falling into place for them, or the double play ball the other night in New York led to the winning runs. Yeah, there's a lot to be said about the fact that I don't deny the Astros could be a team that have destiny on their side. It's just I think that the Phillies coming from where they've come from and overcoming what they've overcome is quite a story as well.
I need a story. I need a story in the mix. And Eric the Driver brings up a good one. Was 2017 a team of destiny because of Harvey?
Sure.
And I remember when the Astros started playing games after the little Harvey break and they were playing in Tampa. I remember I was at the Highway to Hell at the time. I was like, look, the Astros are going to win the World Series. They already had a really good team. They're going to use this to catapult them. They're going to win it. It's going to be a terrible year in terms of Harvey, but the Astros are going to bring the city back together. And honestly, I think it's part of the reason that Houston and the Astros are so big in this city was because at a time of like need and people were losing their houses, and you just drive down the street and you see renovations and houses and gutting houses out, that the only glimmer of like hope for the city and happiness was the Houston Astros. And then they go out and win the World Series that year. I firmly believe that that Harvey and the Astros winning the World Series like brought the city closer. It brought the city together, and it uplifted the city. And look, I don't remember the odds of 2017, but they were the best team in the ALCS, the best team in the American League. They had the home field advantage. They were the favorite then. I don't know if they were the favorite in the Dodgers series. Probably not. But I would totally call the 2017 Astros a team of destiny.
Yeah, because I mean, when I said it here, I said the other thing is, in order for it to be the case, though, you need the players to buy in. Immediately, the quotes from every player was, look, we know that the city has gone through way more than we're going through right now. We want to do this for them. When the patch was made, Houston strong, and that became where everybody went to on the field, no matter what they did and how far they got. And the fact that it just galvanized and bonded this entire city together, you know, even more so over in getting through all these tough times. And it was something that they could hang their hat on. And you saw the social media videos of people with, you know, houses torn down to the studs, but a long extension cord and one TV watching and cheering for this team. There's no doubt that was a team of destiny. I mean, you didn't know at the time what was going to happen with the asterisk and the cheating and the garbage cans. You just knew that it was the right team at the right time to do what this city needed.
That to me is like why I think that whole like destiny conversation, like you need to add the story element too. Todd, the show on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975, he says he kind of simplifies it. A team of destiny is destined to win. Sounds like the Astros to me. Hey, I think that you can define destiny however you think you should define destiny. That's a good point too.
That's why I said it. Do you fit improbability into a separate category or are they the same thing? Because it's improbable that the Phillies are where they are. I don't know the odds on this and the answer to this. I'm just throwing it out there. But I don't know many times that you make an in-season managerial change and it's good enough to get you to the World Series. I think that
Phil Garner.
Phil Garner took over in what, 05?
I can't remember if he took over in 04 or if he took over midseason 05.
My question would be, in the same season that the manager is fired and another manager takes over, how often does it happen where the guy actually takes his team to the World Series? because that's a story in itself. And if it's improbable that it happens,
Garner took over 04.
So then it's a bigger story. The fact that, you know, they had that to deal with, and they were getting rid of, you know, a legendary manager in Joe Girardi to take a guy that
not
had never managed before. Not in Philly,
yeah,
but I'm saying
Philly.
Over his career. Everybody knows that name and knows what he did. So, you know, I think that's part of their story. But, I mean, I'm not here to say that there's, you know, a hurricane that they survived or some kind of tragedy that's made them better or some kind of massive trade and overhaul in midseason that suddenly changed their fortunes. There is, that's just not there.
1790 adding to the 2017 destiny. They were predicted to win the World Series by Sports Illustrated. That's a good point. The Ben Ryder putting the prediction back out in 2014. 8769, Team of Destinies in the eye of the beholder. Astros moved the needle so much that they are Team of Destiny, win or lose. Haters will say it was destiny if the Astros lose.
I can see that too, but I also think personally for the franchise alone and for the city, in a lot of ways, I believe that they're a team of destiny to basically correct, not that they're going to rewrite history, but to prove that you can be mad all you want about 17, but when you have two championships, not one, and you have the sustained success they've had over a six-year period, you can't not give them their due credit for being a talented team and organization.
Somebody at 3016 said, I used to know a girl named Destiny. I'm pretty sure she was a Rangers fan. I don't think the Rangers are a team of destiny. They're hoping so eventually with Bruce Bochy, but not right now. Certainly not a team of destiny right now. 5742, this doesn't have anything to do with destiny, but Ron Darling said on TBS he didn't know the Astros were so complete. I would say that Ron Darling didn't do his homework then. And I would say that's disappointing that Ron Darling didn't know that.
I've already said that when the fact that he was trying to say that the average velocity for Christian Javier was 92-93 and trying to figure out why he was suddenly throwing 95-96 and saying it because he hadn't pitched, you know, in 20-some days except for an inning and a third. He didn't look at, you know, the stats for the entire season. His average velocity was 90, almost 95. It was like 94.7, I think it was. And the fact that, you know, Christian Javier is – you know, one of the most complete pitchers in baseball that, as you said, you know, not enough people were talking about. Well, now they are because he's on the biggest stage. But this is part of why it's been so fun to have everybody else find out along the way what we knew all along in terms of who this team was and how good they could be.
0830, the Phillies are the hot team, and that's what worries me. The Astros ran into hot teams before and lost. Nationals in 19, Braves in 21. The Astros are hotter. Like, if they're not... I think that they're hotter. If they're not hotter, they're just as hot. The Astros have not lost in the playoffs. The Phillies have won three rounds. They swept the Cardinals in the wild card round. They beat the Braves in four in the DS, and they beat the Padres in five. I understand. Whoever gets to the World Series is going to be hot, right? Like, if you win at least two rounds in the playoffs, you're going to be hot when you get there. I don't deny that the Phillies are a hot team. They're 9-2 in their 11 games that they play in the postseason. The Astros are undefeated. You tell me who's hotter, the undefeated team or the team that's 9-2?
It is interesting, though, because I think the narrative is that the Phillies...
Absolutely.
Like, so much so that I don't even necessarily question it myself. But not only are the Astros probably the hotter team, like, they're one of the hottest teams in MLB history heading into the World Series.
I think it's a way of saying that a team that got to the World Series that you didn't expect to be there is the hot team. I think that sometimes we, people in media, we say, oh, well, they're hot. They got to the World. Why are they hot? Well, because they won less than 90 games in the regular season and they've gotten to the World Series. Phillies are 9-2 in the playoffs. They've beaten good teams. The Astros are 7-0 in the playoffs. They've beaten good teams. You tell me which of the two is hotter. Not to mention that every team that gets to the World Series in the history of time has been hot when they got to the World Series.
No. I mean, look, it's a good conversation to have. It's great to be in it if you're the Astros. But when you look at it and say, I think there's a lot to be said about the fact that the story that makes the Astros part of it, too, is still trying to distance themselves and outlive 17. I think that's part of the story that adds to the destiny. That's what I'm saying. No, but that's what I'm saying. To your point, on your side of things, I think that is one of the big stories that's still lingering, that whether you call it the elephant in the room or the cloud that's hovering, or, you know, or the, unless you're Bob Costas, something that isn't talked about as much as it was previously, it is that kind of story to outlive it and basically say, give us our flowers. Six straight years, four World Series in 6 years, two titles if they win this. You know, they're not the Braves of eight straight years to get one World Series, or the Bills to go to five straight Super Bowls and not win one. It's one thing to win one and have it tainted with that little asterisk that everybody wants to put on it. But if you win two and you win it with the distance of time in between, but still had sustained success in between and have a whole different set of players for the most part that do it, then I think that's where you get your flowers and you earn the respect of even those that have been your biggest critics.
713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Speaking of hot, Phillies are hot, Astros are hot, but both teams with a four-day break ahead of the World Series. Who does the break favor? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Who has the advantage that there's rest between the World Series? Both of these teams finished up their DS, or their LCS, rather, on Sunday. The Astros sweeping the Yankees game four of that series on Sunday. And then earlier in the day, ironically enough, it was the Phillies beating the Padres in the fifth game of that series. So Phillies beat the Padres in five. Astros beat the Yankees in four. But the Phillies had locked up their spot in the World Series prior to the Houston Astros locking up their spot in the World Series. Regardless, both teams have 4 days off, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, before they meet up and game one of the World Series on Friday night in Houston. You can listen to the national coverage right here on ESPN 97.5. Todd Kalas joined the Wheelhouse yesterday, spoke to the four-day break, and said who he thinks it favors.
In this case, I actually think it hurts the Phillies because the Astros have dealt with this already. They dealt with it at the end of the regular season, having the 5 days off before they played Seattle. They dealt with it after the Seattle series, having 3 days off before they play the Yankees, and now they'll have another 4 days off this time around before they play the Phillies. The Phillies, they've been running around with their hair on fire. They played the Astros at the end of a three-game road trip before they went on and played their wild card series and won in St. Louis, and then they obviously went on and defeated the Braves, where they finally got back home after a five-city trip because they went to St. Louis and then to Atlanta, and now they're playing in the World Series, where they've been going nonstop. So I think the Phillies, they're going to love the rest. But to me, that's the team that's going to have the bigger adjustment. The Astros have already dealt with a five-day and a three-day rest, and now this one will be a four-day rest.
Are you buying what Kalas is selling here?
I think the big reason why I've said like it's advantage Astros is twofold, but it just relates to the fact that, in my mind, the Phillies have been so hot since they got into the playoffs that four games without baseball has a chance to cool them off. And I like that because a lot of times you hear it from guys, when they got it going good, the last thing they want to do is have a day off, a la Dusty, when a guy's got it going good and he benches him. You want to keep rolling while the going is good. And I think from an Astros perspective, part two, it would be the fact that your second best hitter and arguably the best player in franchise history struggled mightily throughout the first two rounds of the playoffs. Having 4 days off, where I suggested yesterday, take the first two and don't touch a bat. Then get back in there and just get back to your old ways of doing things. Be a creature of habit and what you were doing when things were going well, and just get a clean, fresh start, saying start from scratch, game one of the World Series, and be the best Jose Altuve you could be. I think those 4 days for that particular player are huge.
I can't tell if you were trolling with the Phillies or hot comment.
I think that the Phillies, what they've done on this run and to do what they've done, I think they've been the hot.
Hotter?
I didn't say hotter.
Right, but if
there
if,
could,
if,
again,
but if,
there but could if, be two hot teams.
Sure, but if the game, if the 4 days is going to cool off both teams, wouldn't it impact the hotter team more?
I think it's the way you won the games, too. I think the fact that in a lot of ways there was improbability built into the way the Astros won. It wasn't dominant, like 10-run win, 5-run win, you know, just pitching and hitting and everything clicking on all cylinders. Tucker wasn't great. Altuve was less than great. And the fact that you still found a way to win games. But we know that Mariners series was hard fought.
Uh-huh.
We know the fact that, you know, the Yankees had their opportunities, though they didn't capitalize. And so you swept them too. But it wasn't like it was a cakewalk of dominant performances. Whereas the fact that, you know, that was a slugfest between the Phillies and Padres. They just kept answering the bell and said, you know, whatever you can do, I can do better. And in the process, got guys like a Hoskins that was struggling mightily to find it and find a power stroke and become a big contributor. That's why I think they've been a hot team.
Yeah. I mean, the Phillies had some holes in their lineup, too. They had some struggles in their lineup, too. Like, Hoskins, he hit some homers. He four homers, actually. Those were all four of his hits. He was 4-for-18, all four hits.
I don't believe he hit one until he did the bat spike, because he was, like, 1-for-17.
That was in the, I can't remember if it was in the wild card series or the division series.
I think it was the division
series. But he was 4-for-18 in the CS. Like, Harper was fantastic in the CS. He was red hot. But Hoskins had a bad CS. Bohm had a bad CS. Real Muto had a bad CS. Segura had a bad CS. So, I mean, you could say this on both sides. But the four-day layoff, I agree with Callis. I hadn't really looked at it from the viewpoint that the Astros have done it before, because I think there's two angles of how you look at who does the break favor and why I would give it to the Houston Astros. Like, both teams are going to have the opportunity to set up their pitching, so there's not really an advantage there. And even if the Phillies were to, like, lose that game against the Padres in Game 5 on Sunday, they were still going to have their pitching position to be fine, and at least from a starting rotation. Now, does it tax the bullpen, things like that? Yes, that does matter. But the starting rotation, unless you're going back to Zach Wheeler on short rest, and that series would have still had to go seven games, they were still going to be able to position Wheeler game one, Nola game two, and then shape up the rest of the rotation how they wanted. So there's not really a huge advantage that the Astros could have gained if the Phillies-Padres series went longer. I like what Callis said, though, about the fact that the Astros have done this before. They had the five-day layoff after the regular season to the start of the DS against Seattle, so they lived it. And look, Dusty Baker even said he felt like his team was a little bit rusty coming out in game one of that series. But they've already tasted that, so they know what it feels like. Secondly, the Phillies haven't felt that. They were very active. They had to go into the wild card series and play right away. So they haven't had the experience of how to deal with the layoff of it as well. Mm-hmm. The second thing on how I think that it favors the Houston Astros, this little bit of a break, is just kind of like the emotion of sweeping New York, I think, is significant. I understand there's emotion for both sides of it. Phillies are getting to the World Series. They're riding high. Everything's going great. And then you're off to the World Series. So I understand that emotion's there on both sides. But sweeping the hated rival of the New York Yankees, like, I put more weight on that than I do the Phillies over the Padres in five games. There's no love. There's no bitter rivalry there. There's no hatred between the Padres and the Phillies. That's an emotional ALCS, and you did it with a sweep. So I kind of like the days off there to kind of regroup, get accustomed to playing again in the World Series, or at least looking forward to playing into the World Series. But like what Callis said too, the Astros went five-game break, ALDS, ALCS, four-game break now for the World Series. The Phillies went immediately into the wild card series. They were both teams hot. Who was hotter? Whatever. It doesn't really matter. Both teams are hot entering the World Series. The Phillies now have these 4 days of like, the Astros know what it's like. Are they going to maintain their level of hotness? Where the Phillies were unsure. They've been rolling since the regular season ended without a long stretch of not playing baseball.
I think the biggest thing that goes in the Astros' favor is just the experience card. And the fact that when you look at it, Schwarber won a World Series with the Cubs. But other than that, when you look up and down that roster and you look at the fact that as an organization, they haven't been there since 09. But as a roster, when you look at all the guys and if they've been there before, besides David Robertson.
Those are the two.
I mean, other than that, this is their first go-round. And they're going to understand it's a different ballgame. It literally is. From the way that, you know, the media and all the excess of media that's going to be here just because it's the World Series, from the standpoint that, you know, everything is ramped up even that much more. And the fact that the Astros have been there and been there consistently, and the majority of their roster has been through at least one or two, if not all four, it's going to be a huge advantage for them, especially from a pitching standpoint, where I believe the Astros have the most significant advantage in the fact that almost all of their pitchers, other than Hunter Brown and maybe a couple others, you know, like Neris, have been guys that have been there and played a role and gotten experience on the biggest stage in baseball. It's a different animal. People's emotions take over in a different way, and I think that's something that they're going to have to deal with. The Astros won't.
The other part of it, too, that I think matters a little bit here is, like, you mentioned the hot players, because both teams are hot. The hot players that you've seen coming out of the NLCS for the Phillies are the dudes that you would expect need to have big series for the Phillies in order to win it all. In the NLCS, Bryce Harper hit 400, hit a couple of home runs, hit the big one, obviously, in Game 5, the go-ahead homer in the fifth inning. Kyle Schwarber, who is their leadoff hitter, had three home runs in that series, hit 400 in that series. Hoskins, who bats second for them, he hit 222, 4-for-18. But when all four hits are home runs, that's significant. Mm-hmm. So like those dudes were kind of rolling. Those dudes are kind of going good offensively. And we talked about this when the Astros had the layoff regular season ALDS. That it's baseball such a repetition sport, yep, that maybe it cools down those hot bats. For the Astros' perspective, who's had a hot bat offensively? Jeremy Pena. Yuli. Like, I mean, it could cool off Jeremy Bregman. Pena. Yuli, maybe it cools off Yuli a little bit. Bregman as well. Your two best offensive players, maybe your three best offensive players, if you think Tucker. Kyle Tucker was, yep, your third best offensive player, they did not have a good ALCS. So you're not throwing water on your three hottest hitters, because the Astros' hottest best hitters weren't hot at all on, right, the ALCS.
Late Yordan found some base hits, hit some lasers, so you knew that he was starting to feel – maybe that's a problem too, because he started to feel like he was coming out of it, and now he's not playing for 4 days. But absolutely, from an offensive perspective, and I had this conversation with friends of mine this morning at the gym, I just said, look, you think this team is rolling, but normally when you're rolling, your arguable second best hitter is on fire, and he's not, being the leader offensively that he's been all year in Altuve. Yordan's been up or down. The Mariners series, he was absolutely on fire and in fuego, and since then he cooled way off. Now, late in the season, a couple of key base hits in the Yankee series got him kind of redirected in the right direction. But Tucker, definitely, aside from one home run, has had more than his share of struggles. So you know that your offense isn't nearly as good as it could possibly be. Now, on the positive side, your 7, 8, 9 guys that have been a black hole almost the entire season played massive roles in the way you've gotten to where you've gotten to, with Chaz McCormick, with Maldonado, with the guys that they're putting out there in those positions. They're stepping up.
Yeah, Vasquez had a big day in his start, had the 2 RBI single. Trey Mancini in Game 3 was good. Game 4 was not good. I thought Trey Mancini in Game 3 looked really good. But the Jose Altuve had 3 hits in the ALCS. 2 of those came in Game 4, and both of those were little bleeders. Yeah. Yordan Alvarez had 3 hits in the ALCS. Kyle Tucker had 2 hits in the ALCS. So, like, where the Phillies might be hot offensively, that has 4 days of cooling off. Jeremy Pena, you have to throw him into that mix. You have to mention him. He was great in the, yep, ALCS, winning the MVP. The Astros pitching has been what's hot in this postseason.
That's where I keep going.
And having 4 days off, though, from like a pitching staff, it's just going to shape up. Like, Verlander would have pitched that very next day on Monday. Now he has to wait until Friday. But the Astros pitching, because they've been using a 6-man rotation, because they've been limiting their innings for the second half of the year, kind of already used, sure, to having to deal with something like
this. Yeah, look, the fact that Verlander has proven to be better on 6 days rest, and they've been able to kind of nurse him through the entire regular season this way. The biggest advantage for me, too, is a bullpen that was maybe overused or used to the maximum in terms of who was used when, and Presley, who wasn't used to going back to back, but Presley was lights out, but he was used a little bit more. They get to reset and recharge their batteries too. They get to get their arms right. They'll get some work in, but they'll be ready to go for the first game of the World Series, and they'll stack up as good as your starters will stack up. And that's so key for a team that has relied heavily on the fact that later in games, they can turn the ball over to just about anybody, and they're going to get the job done.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. A lot of people on the text line today have wanted us to get into this Jabari Smith, Jalen Green conversation. So let's do that. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Saturday is shaping up to be a tremendous day in the city of Houston. Tremendous sports day in the city of Houston. Game 2 of the World Series Saturday night. But get your sports Saturday started with homecoming at TDECU Stadium. All roads lead home. Come home to TDECU Stadium. The Cougars very much in the American Conference race, looking for their 3rd straight win as they host USF. Going to be a fun day at the stadium. Very special halftime as well, of course, for homecoming at TDECU. Don't miss the pomp and circumstance of college football, the always great Spirit of Houston, and presentation of the homecoming court. Entertainment by the cheerleaders, Cougar Dolls, Asta and Sasha, DJ Yobi Yobes mixing it up in the student section, and get there early for tailgating at 8. Cougar Walk at 8:45. What better way to get your sports Saturday started? And tickets starting at just $15 while supplies last. Head to uhcougars.com or call 713-GO-COUGS to take advantage of those $15 tickets. Or if you got a family, they got a deal for you there as well. The family 4-pack, 4 tickets, four hot dogs, four chips, four sodas for less than $100. Yeah, all of that for $96. Go to uhcougars.com/promo, enter promo code USF4PACK, or just give them a call, 713-GO-COUG, said, hey, I want that family four-pack. They'll get you hooked up. They'll take advantage. They'll make sure you get cleared away. They'll get you straightened out. They got you. They got your back. 713-GO-COUGS to take advantage of that family four-pack. Don't miss all the fun and pageantry of college football. Come early, be loud, and wear red.